Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Today I've got something special for you. Today we're going to talk about the Russians and the blacks and the Jews, and you're in for some real surprises. But before we get stuck into this, I just want to show you a few pictures quickly, because this is background so that you understand more. So, in the picture in front of you, on the far left, you can see the flag of the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union was known as Jewish Bolshevism in the time of Hitler. They referred to it as Jewish Bolshevism. And so, in that photo, on the left there, you can see two men. The one on the far left is Nelson Mandela, and the one next to him, marked as a Jew and a communist, is the Jew, Joe Slovo. Joe Slovo was a South African Jew, but he was born in Lithuania. His actual name was not Joe, but everybody knew him as Joe. It's your typical Jewish deception. His actual name that he was born with was Yossel Mashel Slovo, but he was born in Lithuania and his family moved to South Africa. And this guy was a hardcore communist. He joined the South African Communist Party in 1942 already. In the middle of World War II, he was already working for communism in South Africa. The South African Communist Party was run by Jews for most of its history. And before him, there was a guy called Bunting. Bunting was also a Jew, and Bunting ran it for a long time. But Joe Slovo himself ran it for decades. And Joe Slovo was said by South African and Rhodesian intelligence, Joe Slovo was said to be a colonel in the KGB, which was the top spying organization of the Soviet Union. And it had a terrible reputation for cruelty and murder and all kinds of stuff. So what you're seeing here is Nelson Mandela, who's actually a communist terrorist, and here he is with Slovo. And this photo was taken in South Africa. In South Africa. So if you look carefully, you'll see blacks around them. And when I tell you that the blacks believed in communism, well, you're about to hear some interesting things today. That hammer and sickle was a terrifying symbol for whites everywhere. This thing was a nasty thing, and across the Western world, the Soviet Union was hated. Unfortunately, when Adolf Hitler was busy smashing Jewish Bolshevism to pieces, America and Britain were helping them to survive. If it wasn't for America and Britain, but especially America, Hitler would have defeated Jewish Bolshevism, and that would have been the end of a very evil system. Instead, they came out the big winners of World War II. They came out with so much that they didn't have prior to World War II. And they controlled half of Europe. They controlled countries from Poland, East Germany, Bulgaria, and the Baltic states. They controlled all those countries for 50 years. And then came the Cold War. And during the Cold War, the Soviet Union plus the Warsaw Pact, which was the chunk of Europe that they controlled, they made a lot of trouble in the world. Vietnam. and all the liberation wars, so-called liberation wars of Africa, came from them. And the guy who actually ran all the liberation wars in Africa, ultimately, the top guy, was Joe Slovo. Joe Slovo was a very important guy. South Africa tried to kill him, and they posted a parcel bomb to him, but his wife opened it and it blew her away instead. So one less Jew, but the wrong Jew. If you look in the photo on the bottom middle, you'll see Mandela and Slovo, and this time they're not looking so serious. Look at them with their Black Power salutes, and there they are standing in front of that hammer and sickle again. Look at how happy they are. Look at Mandela. And later Mandela, the liar, denied being a communist. He denied being a communist. He told many lies to fool America and Britain and so forth. But anyway, that's to show you the links between these guys and communism and the political party that Mandela stood for, the ANC, the African National Congress, rules South Africa to this day. And the greatest success of the Russians in the world during the Cold War was in Africa. They got lots of close black allies due to the fighting against the whites. Now there's something that most people don't know, and if you look in the bottom right of the photo, you'll see the bust of a black guy. But that bust of that black guy is in Moscow. The black guy's name is Patrice Lumumba. He was a black communist in the Congo in the early days of the revolutions against the whites. In Russia, the Russians went and built a university and named it after this black guy, Patrice Lumumba. So there was a Patrice Lumumba University in Russia from about the 1960s until the 1990s. Then the Russians went and renamed it the Friendship University, but it is actually a tribute still to this black communist from Africa. So the Russians don't have universities named after Boers or whites, but they do have a university named after a black communist. In fact, in the time of the Soviet Union, they even had a postage stamp with this black guy's head on it. Now, Putin has said that the collapse of the Soviet Union was the greatest disaster ever, and that he's trying to recreate it. Putin has pretty much been indicating that he wants the Soviet Union back. And of course, having been in the KGB, etc., in the top right, you can see Putin with all his African buddies. He's had meetings with them, he's invited them to come to Russia, and he has discussions with them. The Russians and the blacks are very tight. But the people who started this were the Jews. The Jews got the blacks to the Russians. That's basically how it happened. The Jews needed somebody to arm the blacks so they could kill the whites. And the original Jews in South Africa who were trying to start the race war, they got the blacks to start going to Russia. The Jews started chucking the blacks on planes and sending them to Russia. But the Russians themselves were busy stirring up the blacks. That is why the Russians were kicked out of South Africa in the 1950s. So the Jews, the Russians, and the blacks are a very tight circle. They were then, and they still are right now, decades later. Let's take a look at some other photos quickly before we delve into the matter that we want to delve into today. Here you can see a graphic on the left that somebody put out recently, and it seems to be for Black History Month. And it says, "We will always remember the role of Afro-Cuban revolutionary soldiers in the liberation struggle of Angola, Mozambique, Namibia, Congo, and the entire African continent against white supremacist imperialism. Africa will always love Cuba." And further down, you'll see it says, "We will always love Cuba, Fidel Castro," that was the leader of Cuba at the time. Then it says, "Namibia," which used to be German Southwest Africa, "Tanzania," which used to be German East Africa, "Angola," which used to be Portuguese, "Congo," which used to be Belgian, "Mozambique," which used to be Portuguese. But that Angolan angle, that's where the South African army fought the Russians, the blacks, and the Cubans. Now, in this photo that you see on the right, that is from South Africa. That's from a military book. And what you see there is a classroom. And this is what relates to what I'm about to show you here. This is a classroom, and you'll see that the students who are sitting there are blacks. And then you'll see that on the wall are photos. And those photos, there where the arrow is, where the red arrow is, those photos are of Marx, the Jew Karl Marx, on the far left, and then the Jew Lenin. So those are key characters in the Soviet Union, and their pictures are on the wall of this classroom. If you look behind the two men that are lecturing there, you'll actually see on the second line, you'll see MPLA. MPLA were the communists who took over Angola. Now, these two men that you see standing in front of the class who are lecturing, the one is a Cuban and the other one is a Russian. So Cubans and Russians were working together. They were teaching these blacks all about warfare and all the things they needed to know in order to destroy the whites. So keep this classroom picture in mind in the stuff that I'm going to be showing you. So the special thing that I'm going to show you today is something from the research that I did when I was writing Government by Deception. When I was working on Government by Deception, my book, I was talking to military people, and I was talking to mostly Afrikaans military people, mostly intelligence people, and getting data from them. But then I wanted to see if I could get a chance to speak to any blacks. And in April of 2001, I managed to get hold of two blacks who had been in the ruling party and who had been fighting against the whites. And today you're going to hear one of those blacks. So the black that you're going to hear is a woman, and her first name is Susan. And I managed to get these interviews with these blacks, and I spoke to them on the phone quite a few times. And I told them that I was doing research for my book. And when I was talking to them, I was basically acting like a liberal journalist. And I wanted to just chat to them and ask them questions, and it was all friendly and pleasant. This particular woman was moving upwards in communism. She was in the ruling party and she was doing very well, and they wanted to push her towards becoming a proper communist in the South African Communist Party. Now, as you see these blacks sitting in the classroom here, lots of these blacks went into exile. So that was the term that they used, that they left South Africa and they went into exile. But when they were in exile, they were sitting with the Russians mostly, but they were basically outside of South Africa and they were moving in communist circles. But the people who controlled this, the people who sent them on courses, the people who put them in various camps, the people who organized all these things were the Russians. So they would move them around, they'd have bases for them, and these blacks would travel to different countries. Sometimes the blacks might even be lucky enough to go to Moscow or to go somewhere else in the Soviet Union. Some of these blacks ended up in Odessa in the Ukraine. But they would also go to other places. Tanzania, German East Africa, was another place where they had bases. There is a certain amount of junk in the white right where people, while analyzing stuff relating to Jews, then get an idea in their head and they then carry on pushing that idea as if it is real, when in fact there's no proof of it. A common idea that I've come across is the notion that the West only hated countries that didn't have a central reserve bank. So later on, when you hear that Gaddafi of Libya was destroyed, then people in the white right say, it's because he didn't have a reserve bank. But in actual fact, the real thing that was going on was it was the Cold War and the Russians had lots of allies. And those allies that the Russians had decades ago are still allies of the Russians to this day. These alliances don't go away, they stay. So even though officially there's no Communist Party running Russia, you'll find that all the countries that were part of the Communist Alliance of the Soviet Union and China, that all of them are still working together to this day. Another example is North Korea. North Korea is communist, and North Korea sticks with the Russians. They're always working with the Russians and the Chinese. Iran was another one that fell into the fold, even though they weren't communist, but that was because they managed to get the Muslims to overthrow the previous pro-Western Iranians. But you'll see Syria, Libya, and others that all work together. So these blacks from South Africa and Rhodesia even ended up in places like Libya, and they worked with those people. And it had nothing to do with banking. It had to do with the fact that they were in a military alliance together in support of each other, trying to smash Western countries and especially break colonialism. So the destruction of Muammar Gaddafi had nothing to do with banking. It had everything to do with his military activities and the things he was getting up to. Muammar Gaddafi was like Saddam Hussein of Iraq. Same kind of thing. And you'll see Iraq was a big buddy of the Russians. Most people in the West and even here in South Africa, don't know, for example, that North Korea sent troops to what is now Zimbabwe. There was a time when North Korea sent troops to Zimbabwe to train blacks in their brutal methods, and they created a special brigade in Zimbabwe. In August 1981, they sent North Korean, quotes, military advisors, and you can read into that military officers and trainers, they sent them to Zimbabwe, former Rhodesia, and they started training a unit in the Zimbabwe army called the 5th Brigade. They trained them according to North Korean communist standards. The 5th Brigade later went on to slaughter large numbers of blacks, and the 5th Brigade was known as the most brutal unit in Zimbabwe. That thing was nasty, and it was trained by North Koreans. In the same way the Chinese came to Zimbabwe as well, and Chinese came and went in various parts of Africa. The Chinese tend to come and go. They are not very solid. They're not very successful in Africa, actually. The Chinese are kind of weak and they're not that successful. But they're always fiddling around in different parts of Africa. The Libyans trained lots of these blacks of ours as well. These blacks were trained all over the show. They got trained by different armies, but the Russians coordinated and ran the whole thing. The Russians trained the blacks how to kill. But they trained them more than that. They taught them other things. They taught them propaganda. So from my recordings, I've sliced out an 18-minute piece for you to listen to, because this is a very interesting piece. So here I am talking to Susan. Susan now has a baby, so her baby makes quite a bit of noise. You'll be able to hear clearly enough, but on occasion the baby makes a lot of noise. All my discussions with Susan took place telephonically, and I recorded them. And she knew that I was doing research. So she regarded me as a journalist, and she knew that I was going to write about this. So I asked her lots of different questions, and I chatted to her. And you're going to hear some interesting things. In this phone call, I call her and I ask her to tell me more about the Russians teaching the blacks about propaganda. So you will hear her talking about things like being in exile and being in a camp. She's in a military camp. There are military camps that the Russians have set up where these blacks are training and being taught and are doing things. So she discusses doing propaganda in the camp. She discusses listening to other radio stations. And listen carefully, because she talks about what the Russians taught them about propaganda. So I must emphasize that everything the blacks did in Africa against the whites, everything that they did, they were taught. They were taught either by Jews or by Russians or by Cubans. You'll hear her mentioning Joe Slovo, that same Jew, that Lithuanian Jew communist who runs the South African Communist Party. You'll hear her talking about Joe Slovo. If you listen carefully, you'll hear her talking about how the Russians, and you'll hear her use the word Russians. So even though this happened in the time of the Soviet Union, these people referred to those people as Russians, because they were Russians. There are people on the white right who've completely befuddled themselves, and they are imagining all kinds of junk. So let me just make some things clear. The Soviet Union was basically the Russian Empire plus some extra territory. I've gone and looked into this issue of the Soviet Union, and the biggest single ethnic group in the Soviet Union was Russians. Russians made up 70% of the Soviet Union. So the kinds of people that we ran into were Russians. And later I will discuss with you and show you that we had actual Russians that we killed and captured. South Africa killed and captured actual Russians. Rhodesia also killed a couple of Russians. So real Russians were walking around in Africa. And these Russians were in charge. They were military officers. And they were in charge. And they gave orders. And they did things. The Russians were the bosses. And then you had a couple of Jews like Joe Slovo, Ronnie Kasrils, who were also in there. But none of these things would be happening without the military power of the Soviet Union. And the physical people who came here were Russians. And people want to now say, oh, well, you see, the Jews were in charge in the time of the Soviet Union, but the Jews are gone now. And, you know, Russia is just pure Russia. Well, that's a bunch of crap, that. Because Putin has got lots of Jews around him, and there are lots of high-ranking Jews in Russia. And these Jews play an important role. They are there related to the government, and there's that other Jew, Vladimir Solovyov. Solovyov, I think is the way you pronounce it. Vladimir Solovyov is a famous Russian TV presenter. He's like the Dr. Goebbels of Russia today. But Vladimir Solovyov is a Jew. He's 100% Jewish. He identifies as a Jew. And he's a big player in Russian TV and Russian propaganda for Russians. He's the number one guy in Russia, and he's a Jew. There are tons of Jews around. There are oligarchs around with money. Putin is very Jew-friendly. So the notion that, oh, the Jews are gone now and everything's just Russian. No, it isn't, okay? There are still lots of Jews. There might not be as many as they used to be, but they are still in incredibly dominant positions all over the show. They play a serious role in Russia today. So all this kind of talk to pretend, oh, the Russians are different now and Russia itself is different. Meanwhile, Putin turns around and says, oh, the greatest disaster was the collapse of the Soviet Union. I mean, what does that tell you? Vladimir Putin is longing for the Soviet Union, for Jewish Bolshevism, and he himself has got all kinds of friendly links to Jews. He's got Jews around him. He's got Jews in government. He's got Jews that are funding him. The guy who runs Wagner, Prigozhin. Prigozhin is basically a Jew. Prigozhin's father was a Jew. Prigozhin's grandfather was a Jew. So he's sort of borderline where you can say, oh, well, his mother wasn't a Jew. But he is basically, hectically Jewish, Prigozhin. So Wagner is run by a Jew. And that Jew is Putin's close buddy. And I think that Christians in the white right are just loving to fool themselves by saying, oh, Putin, he's really a Christian. But Putin's longing for communism, man. And Putin himself was in the KGB. P- Putin might even have been in Angola. There's a possibility that Putin maybe even was in Angola. I've come across references to that. And Putin's German teacher, the woman who taught Putin German, was Jewish. And later he bought her an apartment in Tel Aviv in Israel. And when she died, she actually gave the apartment back to Putin. So yes, Putin inherited the apartment back, and it's an apartment that sits in Tel Aviv in Israel. When Putin was a kid, his family shared a home with Jews. So the real secret of Putin may be that of the Russians, he was the one who had the most Jewish connections. That may be the secret to the rise of Vladimir Putin. So anyway, listen to this. You're going to hear a black woman talking in April 2001, and she's not going to be talking about the Soviet Union. She's going to talk about the Russians. And then she's going to talk about Joe Slovo, the communist Jew. You'll see that Joe Slovo was teaching her politics, and the Russians were teaching her propaganda. And how, listen to how she describes what the Russians tell them is the main enemy. The Russians were teaching them the main enemy is America, and they must rewrite all the news so that America looks bad. I hope that Americans can understand her English. South Africans will find it a lot easier to understand, but I hope that you can understand her English. Listen carefully. If need be, listen to it again. It's 18 minutes long. And I repeat many things that she says, so that should help. You'll see that they love communism, and they wanted to be in the Communist Party themselves, and that to be a communist was to be in the elite. And you'll hear her talking about the SACP. The SACP is the South African Communist Party. You'll also hear her talking about COSATU, that is a communist trade union in South Africa. You'll even catch her talking about Cyril. She'll say, oh, if Cyril starts his own political party. That reference is to Cyril Ramaphosa, who is the current black Jew, who is the president of South Africa. She talks about democracy. She talks about the DA. The DA is basically the Jewish-controlled liberal party in South Africa. It was originally for whites. The Jews were trying to con the whites into voting for them, and it's undergone many name changes, as is typical of Jews, and its current name is known as the DA. And if you really listen carefully near the end, she talks about Mbeki quite often. Mbeki was a previous black president of South Africa, and she'll even say people disappear in the night. And what she means is that Mbeki, the president, the black guy in charge of South Africa, that he will murder people. He will murder people. And that's what she's referring to. She says people will disappear in the night. All of these people, the ANC and these communists and so forth, they're a miserable bunch of people, they're freaking evil, and this is not democracy as usual. So I urge you to listen to it twice, even three times, because she talks about a lot of stuff, and I'm quizzing her and I'm taking it back and forth. And you are going to hear out of the mouth of a black person about Jews and Russians. And it's going to give you an idea of what it was like in those camps, What were they being taught? How were their minds being formed? These people are being taught how to hate America and how to fight the whites of South Africa. And another thing, another very important point before I forget, if you listen carefully, you'll hear her talking about commissars. A commissar is one of those communist positions. A commissar has a certain position in the military. You would get political commissars. And if you listen to this black carefully, you are listening to someone talking about communism, and everything that she talks about reeks and smells of communism, Jewish communism. And you'll even see that she says things like, oh, the Russians never colonized Africa. So listen to this. It is 18 minutes long. Listen carefully. There's a lot that she says. And this stuff you will never pick up in the normal modern literature, etc. But she's telling it to you. She was there.
Hello.
Hi there, Susan. Hello, Susan.
Hello.
It's Jan Lamprecht here again. I'm back. Anyway. Right, yeah. You were saying to me that you were a good propagandist. How, tell me a bit about that. In what way?
Maybe not in the real sense of the propagandist, but no matter what we did, we had a news desk.
Yeah.
Collecting news from all the radio stations international. We had this radio.
Yeah.
Normally it will, we would be able to catch any station international.
Yeah.
I don't know if you get what I'm saying.
Okay,
so
I'm with you.
So we'd be able to listen to Radio Bulgaria, Radio Moscow, India, Japan, China,
yeah.
All of this.
Yeah.
And then collecting the news, getting what is happening internationally. And then around evening, around late to midnight, you compile the news. And then in the morning, 9 o'clock, you read the news in the camp. When you read them, you read international news, and then you come to African news, then you come to South African news.
Okay.
So when you are doing that, you write the news in a way that it would suit the mood in the camp. You get what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. Tell me.
So you are able to report about America in as bad way as you can, but you tell the truth.
You tell the truth, but you tell it in as bad a way as you can.
Yes. Like maybe I'll give an example. There was this coup in Somalia. Is it Somalia? Yeah, Somalia, where the president around 1991, somewhere there.
Huh?
Where the president managed to run away, went in exile, and there was some sort of a coup.
Mm-hmm.
If there's something like that reported over the news, you go to the library, you get the material, the history of the country, and then you get who was colonizing the country, who refused to give people the liberation and the independence, and you get the full story, who participated.
Yeah.
The arms, everything.
Yeah.
Until the liberation day. And then you get who took over from that.
Yeah.
So you get the influences, the people who were influencing that person immediately after independence.
Yeah.
The role America played as the capitalist countries and the West, you know.
Yeah.
The role they played. And then you get down, you check everything. When you report it in the morning, you have the full story of that, the historical background of that country. And you're able to say, during the Civil War in such a year, America was funding the state, was funding the state with arms, at the same time funding the bandits, you know, the bandits.
The rebels?
Yeah, the rebels with the arms. Just as long as it got money, it didn't care if there was development or there was peace in that country. See?
Okay.
So those were the things you normally reveal about the countries that were not really supporting us in the liberation struggle, or we thought they were not supporting.
So was America a particular target, or just all Western nations?
Sorry?
Was America a particular target for you? The worst.
But America, you know, it played a big role. You know, America is involved in so many things. I don't know. Maybe I'm saying you know because I think you're an academic.
Yeah.
He doesn't mind fighting Iran and Iraq at the same time while they're still fighting each other, you see.
Okay.
That did kind of something like that. So most Britain didn't like playing in such. Normally we'll like paint it on the list that it was the one colonizing that country after they were given, after the independence. It did not really like do a real demarcation in terms of the African people. It came with its own demarcation. That's why the civil war, you see. When you, like in the lecture room, when you're teaching, you always take people to the direction that you want them to go. You tell them the bad things about the colonizers as well as the and so on and so forth. That is why this is happening in Africa now.
And so you blame the colonizers for everything? Is that what you're taught to do? Or do you believe that? Or?
No, not really what you're taught to do. What you're taught is to... What they really taught us was to be some sort of the black conscious. That's where they started, to be...
Black consciousness.
Like, yeah, to be able to be proud of Africa and to understand why things are happening in Africa. And to do that, you have to make somebody bad and make one understand that is always good and right. No. And then from there, when you mature, you are able to apply your own independent critical thinking on that. But what they did is say the West did this, you know, the West did this. Because I don't have anywhere where Russia colonized any African country, see. So because the situation was like that, it was always the West.
So the West is always to blame for everything.
Yeah.
Okay, and colonialism is like part of all of the nasty stuff that the West did.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that, I take it that you never criticize any of the communist countries.
Yeah, when you had to politically mature, you know, you had to go through some stages. Basically, when they start like in the, I'm not going to make any comparison. What they do. You go to party schools, they fund you, everything you see from the East, from Moscow, from all these communist countries normally. The camouflages, the booths, everything. No,
yeah.
Peace. So you are not really taught to criticize them and to say they are bad.
Okay.
The issues of Stalin, you discover them when you mature politically, and then you go to the commissars and you say, this is Stalin, and they'll tell you why Stalin failed, you know. It's like at the university, they start with you, and then they give you what they want you to know, until you reach a stage where you can question and say, but Stalin did this, or communism failed here and here. And then they're able to sit down with you and say, now we can really discuss politics. You go to specific people ranking very high, you know.
Okay. So, and then what do they say, like, about a guy like Stalin? I'm just kind of thinking, when you go to them and you now say to them, okay, well, I've seen this horrible thing in communism, explain it to me, then how do they explain it to you?
It will depend on an individual commissar. Others were staunch communists, you know, always defending. Like I said, not everybody is a communist. Few were invited to be communists. Those who were staunch communists, I mean, my experience told me that those who were really staunch communists, who really loved communism, they would sit down and say, this is where Stalin and communism went wrong. Like, I don't know. My experience with Joe Slovo is said that he's not the kind of guy who really didn't like hiding things. He would say, yes, he failed. He did terrible things. He did this and this and this and this and this and this and this.
Yeah.
Communism didn't start there and doesn't end there, you know. We can correct it here and here, you know. Others who I think were not really intelligent, they will always defend things like Stalin and communism.
Okay. So they admit their mistakes, and then they say, well, you know, we're going to do better next time. So some of them admit that communism went wrong, but that the problem can still be fixed.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Like they still believe it can always be fixed.
Did you actually know Joe Slovo? Or deal with him? Or talk to him?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And how did you find him? I take it easy.
Joe Slovo was one of the people who were very accessible. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe not to each and everyone.
Yeah.
Because I discovered about my fate, my so-called fate or destiny, when I got home. That when I went to exile, I went at the wrong time when people inside the country were told to contact me and groom me to be part of one of the leading women in the Communist Party. You know, I was like targeted from exile. I didn't know. Well, I was a good public speaker during that time, and I was very naughty. When I went out, I disorganized the whole program. They just don't tell you. They go to you and they say, we are grooming this woman or this person or this kid. Yeah, well. So the person who was tasked to groom me did a very good job, starting with the constitution, the history of South Africa and so forth. But because I didn't know, they wanted me to be part of the Communist Party inside the country, I went out and I did all those things. You know, when you don't know anything. Until when I came back and I was told all that some people were tasked for it.
Oh, okay.
Something like that. When you are good, they take your name outside, and the communists or whoever, the leadership will discuss and say, I think we should start grooming that person to be this and this and this and this.
Yeah. And you say that the kind of people they pick are only the most intelligent.
For the party.
Yes.
I'm telling you, party goes for very intelligent people. It just doesn't undermine
it. Is that so? So, you know, because, I mean, a lot of people look at the Communist Party and they say, but there are so few people there and, you know, they will never have, like, popular support and that sort of thing. What do you think of the South African Communist Party?
The Communist Party in South Africa?
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, it's still the same. They don't open up their membership to everyone. That is why I think there are few.
So it's actually more of an elite thing than anything else.
Communist Party.
Yeah.
I will tell you, each and every South African, black South African, would rather go for Communist Party. They are saying, why doesn't it break from the ANC and everybody will vote for it? But I think they are not breaking from the ANC too, because they are still having problems with addressing it.
So you say that if the SACP breaks from the ANC, the blacks will vote for the SACP.
I'm telling you.
You're kidding me.
No,
is that so? Why?
It's just that they don't. I don't know. What I think personally.
Tell me.
You see how strong COSAT is.
Yeah.
COSAT is strong because of the Communist Party.
Uh-huh.
And ANC gets so many votes because of Communist Party and SACP. People who do the teaching, the indoctrination in the ANC are the communists, you know. Not teaching people to be communists. They are grooming people for ANC leadership. ANC itself, it's just a skeleton. It can't groom and break leaders, but SACP is doing that for it.
So, in other words, the ANC is just like the puppet. And the SACP.
I can say that. But no, I don't know. I don't know. I'm writing a paper on that too. What I can say,
are you writing a paper?
Yes, I like writing papers. I'm doing something on that. I'm trying to understand.
For publication or for studies?
For yourself. To put that down and be able to analyze and test.
Wow. I'd love to make use of the things that you've told me, because you've told me things that I've never heard. But I will tell you something. I like what you're saying, and I'll tell you something that I heard from a professor who told me that he'd spoken to Joe Slovo himself. And he said exactly what you've just told me. He said that Joe Slovo had said to him that should the time ever come where the ANC doesn't work with the SACP, that in fact the SACP would be able to take the black vote. And I mean, to hear it come out of your mouth, I mean, wow. And you say that's the way black people feel right now.
You know what I can tell you now?
Yeah?
What I'm still concentrating on is that the black South Africans need an alternative to the AIDS, and they are so desperate.
Are they?
Yes, yeah. They are desperate. And they are waiting for any leader, maybe Cyril or anyone, to say, I'm opening my own party or something.
Yes,
and they move as a clique. I'm telling you, it is going to be the
You know, because party. Now I want to ask you something. Are you a member of the DA?
Yes. I've joined the DA this year, General.
Now, do you think that the DA, I take it that you've joined them because you think they could be an alternative to the ANC or not, or what?
DA, not DP or NP, DA itself.
Yeah?
I told them, like I told Russell, that we will need to produce a lot of papers for them to understand the trend and the wave and where the politics of South Africa are going. What I realized about people who have been in the DP and NP,
yeah,
they are totally divorced from the realities, you know.
Nice.
They are only there at national level and parliament fighting the issues that come there. But down here, they miss the point.
They do not understand the black people.
Yeah, they don't know. Like, they need to understand the how to get into the township, like how to push the black recruitment, drive. So it can be an alternative. It can be an alternative because at some level, people are joining DA from ANC like us. We are still young. We even get blessings from the national leadership of the ANC. No, this what is happening is nonsense. You are still young. Go ahead and join the DA. Whatever you can do, as long as you can defend the democracy that has been established in South Africa. Because what we see happen is that it won't last.
The ANC won't last.
No, not only the ANC. The democracy itself. There are people who are really committed to what happened in South Africa.
Yeah.
So when they see the ANC in one way or the other failing, they don't mind saying, they have expelled you and they are expelling very good complaints who are coming up with good issues. You can go ahead and join DA. Find an alternative for black people, but to defend democracy, please go ahead and do. You understand what I'm saying?
I think I missed you a little bit there. Maybe you can just tell me again?
I am saying,
yeah.
Even the most people,
yeah,
who are joining DA, who are my age, 30 less young people, you know.
Okay.
Who are flocking to DA.
Yeah.
Some of them did get a blessing from some of the national leadership of the ANC itself
to join.
Yeah, go and create an alternative for South Africa for black people, for anyone who was a member of the ANC and very much unhappy with the way the ANC is governing. What they said to us, Normandy, are you here?
I'm there. Sorry, it was just my stupid cell phone, but it hadn't actually done anything, yeah?
What they normally say, you know, to convince a lot of people like myself to even join, you know, they said, You must be patriotic to your country, you must put your country first. It must come first, not the ANC must come first.
And the ANC told you to do this?
Not I can't say that at the moment. There's a whole big fighting going on at national level.
Okay.
We don't know about it, I know.
Okay.
What I can say is that I don't feel I have betrayed my people and my leadership because some of them are 100% behind me. On the basis that the way Thabo Mbeki and his clique are running things now, we'll end up in a situation where people disappear in the evening because they opposed Thabo Mbeki or ANC in the township. So we are trying to create an alternative. We are trying to say this democracy is too special for us to lose it now.
Okay.
You get
it? Okay, now I'm with you.
Yeah.
And so the supporting the DA is like part of...
Yeah.
Is still a patriotic thing.
Yeah.
But why not support the SACP?
So that was part of my chat to Susan back in April of 2001. The date that I've got as per my notes is the 20th of April 2001. But she's not the only black that I spoke to. And we will return to this topic of what these blacks said. But I just wanted to grab that little piece so that you can hear out of the mouth of a black about communism and that the Russians and the Jews were teaching them about communism. And she refers to the Russians and communism, and she talks all about communism, and this is in the year 2001. And people might not believe me when I say that the blacks are communists. The blacks in Southern Africa really are communists. They believe in communism, and they see Russia, Putin's Russia, they see it as being the same country that they knew when they were in their camps. I'm not sure how easily the whites outside of South Africa could understand her English, but just to go over some of the stuff. There she was saying that she was taught propaganda, and she was taught propaganda and how to focus it on America. And that she has to rewrite the news so that America looks bad. And that they always have to make Europe and the West look bad, but the country that they need to make the worst is America. And then she goes on about how Russia never colonized Africa. So the blacks can then blame everyone for colonialism. But that's all junk, because colonialism brought blacks the greatest peace, the greatest success, the greatest progress they've ever known in their history. But you can see that the Jewish and Russian angle is that everything about colonialism is bad and wrong. That's just the same as the way that they go at the Germans and they say, oh, everything that Hitler and the Nazis did was evil and wrong. Everything that Mussolini did in Italy was evil and wrong. But the people who lived in those countries and saw the benefits of what happened and who knew why things were done in certain ways, they know the benefits. Anyway, did you see that she knew the Jew, Joe Slovo, personally? And did you see how important he was to her and how he was teaching the blacks all about communism? And even when it came up with the issues of cruelty and failure, how the Jew Joe Slovo then says, well, you know, communism can be improved, etc., etc. And did you see how the best people, the better people in the camp, they looked up to communists, and the blacks want to be communists? Now, in South Africa, if you ask any white or anyone who knows anything about the politics, there's not one white person in South Africa, either liberal or conservative or right-wing, who takes the South African Communist Party seriously. But if you listen to her, she tells you that the blacks, all the blacks, trust the South African Communist Party. There was a professor that I knew. I can't remember his name now, but I think he was an Afrikaans guy. I think he was Afrikaans military guy that I spoke to at one point in the early days of African crisis. And that professor told me that at any time the South African Communist Party can come out of the shadows and it can register as a political party that's going to take part in the elections. And he predicted that the South African Communist Party can at any time destroy the ANC. However, the arrangement between the South African Communist Party and the ANC is basically that the South African Communist Party hides quietly, but the South African Communist Party can create its own leaders, it can create its own personalities, and then those personalities are deployed into the ruling party, the ANC. And all those South African Communist Party senior people then go and stand in the elections as members of the ANC. This is an old arrangement that the whites knew about decades ago. And that is how the Communist Party kind of hides. It hides, but it controls things. She even said there that the Communist Party has made COSATU strong. COSATU is a big trade union, and you will see a lie that they put out there where they say that COSATU is a private trade union, but she tells you that it's the Communist Party that has made COSATU strong. And the tripartite alliance is between the SACP, COSATU, and the ANC. But the real thinking, all the real thinking, is done by the Communist Party. So when the whites of South Africa and Rhodesia and the Portuguese, whenever we talk about the fact that we were fighting communism, we weren't making this stuff up. And she even mentions Cyril. Oh, if Cyril creates his own political party, that's the guy who's currently ruling South Africa, the black Jew, Cyril Ramaphosa. My own thinking is that he probably converted to Judaism like about 10 years after this discussion that I had with this woman. And she was talking about infighting inside the ANC. It was probably infighting between Mbeki's people and Zuma's people. And then she was saying people disappear in the night. In other words, somebody comes at night and they grab you and they abduct you and they kill you. These blacks in Africa, they don't play games, okay? All these blacks in Southern Africa function like this. You will never hear liberals and Jews talking about this stuff. But this is what the whites knew. This is what the military knew. And then she also mentioned commissars. A commissar is an old-style Jewish Bolshevik term that they used in the Soviet Union. And a commissar is a person with a special position and they do certain things. There are political commissars, and they've got a lot of power. So they have these political commissars that are almost like ideologues, and they still have got power in the military of these blacks. These blacks functioned exactly according to the old-style Bolshevik stuff. They learned communism. They became communists. And their link to Russia is that they know the Russians will at any time give them weapons. They can always get weapons from the Russians. And they know that they can get that any time that they got a problem. And that's a very important thing. President Richard Nixon raised that very issue. In many ways, modern whites think that a lot of stuff has changed. But I think that what's really gone on is that America engaged in a lot of liberal deception. And America did it in order to beat Russia, in order to get Russia to not have the same kind of hold on the blacks that Russia would otherwise have had. Russia almost nearly grabbed all of Africa. And so liberalism is a kind of deception. But now that we're in this Ukraine war, and now that Russia and the West are fighting properly by way of Ukraine, it is possible that the links between the blacks and the Russians will be strengthened as time goes by. But for the blacks, it is a trade-off between guns from the Russians and money and economics from Europe and America. I personally think that this business of using trade and business as a way of controlling other countries, I don't think it's a very effective thing. It does work, it does have a lot of power, but I think it's a hell of a waste of money. So that will give you an idea of something that a black person told me straight out, someone who was being groomed to be in the Communist Party. There is more to this, and I spoke to other blacks. You will hear more. We will return to this topic. Take a look at the cartoon on the screen in front of you. I was given this recently by Sonny Thomas in America, and I'm loving the kinds of stuff that are coming out from the white right. People are really starting to come right. They're starting to realize, look at how the message that's coming out of the mass media is nothing more than selectively interpreted propaganda. So there's a guy in America who sang a song. And in the song, it had the words, try that in a small town. and the news says, ah, this guy is a racist, he's inciting violence, because it's all about, try that in a small town. You know, the people, the white people, will sort you out. So you can say there's a little bit of a veiled threat in that song. But compare it to South Africa. We have a whole freaking stadium full of blacks, and they're singing, kill the Boer, kill the farmer. And then the news says, no, no, it's just a song. Don't take it literally. And the blacks say that, and the courts say that. Keep this hypocrisy in mind as you listen to some of my commentary, which is coming up regarding things like black consciousness, Pan-Africanism, etc. You will see the absolute rampant hypocrisy that actually exists. So let's return to the things that Susan said. If you listened carefully to what Susan said, she was also saying that they were listening to various radio stations, and you'll hear that all the radio stations that she's mentioning were either Russian or they were communist. They were part of the Warsaw Pact. So you'll hear she said that she was listening to Radio Moscow, Radio Bulgaria, and so on. Now, a very important set of questions I asked her was about whether they criticize the Russians. Since they criticize Europe and colonialism, and they focus on telling the worst things about America, I thought I'd put her in a spot and ask her about whether they criticize the Russians. And so she defended it by saying, well, the Russians didn't colonize Africa. But if you listened very carefully, if you listen real carefully, you'll hear her actually saying that everything they've got there in the camp comes from the Russians. She talks about the uniforms, the boots. In other words, the military uniforms that they are wearing come from the Russians. The boots that they are wearing come from the Russians. Everything in the camp comes from the Russians. So, of course, they can't criticize the Russians because everything they have and all the opportunities they have to fight the whites is due to the Russians. The Russians are making it possible. What she didn't mention, but which did happen to the blacks, is that there was a time in the 1960s, probably long before she was born, there was a time in the 1960s when these blacks from the ANC were not able to get any black African countries to allow them to be based there. And so there was a time where the Russians came and took all the ANC exile people and they took them to Ukraine and they dumped them in Ukraine. They were in the city of Odessa for a couple of years. But this is long before Susan's time. Did you hear her using the term black consciousness? Black consciousness. That is actually a very, very important thing. And if you listened to her definition of black consciousness, she tells you that here is the Jew Joe Slovo and the Russians, and they are teaching the blacks to be black conscious. And what does that mean? It is so that the blacks start thinking about everything that happens to them and to think of it with regard to themselves. So black consciousness is that blacks need to look at all the things that are happening out there politically, etc., and they have to then interpret it as it relates to them. If you go and you look up a definition of black consciousness, it actually comes from a black guy in South Africa called Steve Biko. And I think Steve Biko died in jail, and they strongly suspect that maybe some white cops beat him to death. That could well have happened. Basically, Steve Biko was one of these early black rebels against the whites here in South Africa. And if we take a look at the Encyclopedia Britannica, it says the following. The black consciousness movement in South Africa was born in SASO. That's probably a movement that he started. And it says, black consciousness as defined by Biko was the awakening of self-worth in black populations. The movement's leaders hoped to redefine black, recognizing that the term was no longer a simple racial classification, but a positive unifying identity. So basically, what the Encyclopedia Britannica is telling you is that black isn't racist, but it is racist. They are now coming up and saying that this movement, which is basically saying that you've got to deal with black consciousness or become black conscious, they then have to now explain how black consciousness is not black racism. But at the end of the day, the simple answer is that it is racism. And they're just trying to bullshit their way out of it by inventing some reasons why it's not racism. And it's much the same as here in South Africa, where under black rule, we've got racial quotas and we are classified by race. And then there are laws that have been passed by the parliament which do discriminate against whites on a racial basis. You'll be kicked out of your job. You can have all kinds of things taken away from you because you are white. But now the ruling ANC has to now pretend that what it's doing is not racist. So they are using racial classifications. They are doing things against us. It is basically apartheid in reverse. It is basically racism in reverse. Instead of whites being racist, it's blacks being racist. But now they try to pretend and bullshit that racism is only racism when whites do it. Racism is not racism when blacks do it. And that's pretty much the same thing that's going on here with this Steve Biko stuff. Another example of blacks engaging in racism in Africa, in rampant racism, and yet nobody points out that it's racist, is Pan-Africanism. Pan-Africanism is that all blacks of Africa must unite together and work together. And it's a term that's been thrown around and used a lot, and yet you'll never hear anybody saying, oh, those blacks are being racist. They are doing Pan-Africanism or believing in Pan-Africanism. And the same is true with black consciousness. Black consciousness teaches them that they must look at everything with context to themselves. And if it's something that is not good for them, then they must attack it and denounce it and so forth. So if you listened to Susan and what she's saying about black consciousness and how they were taught that they must look at things from a black consciousness perspective, they are basically being taught to be racists. That here is this Jew and here are these Russians, and they're saying to the blacks, you must be racist, you must look at things from a racist point of view for yourself. And those whites who came to colonize you, that was bad for you, or so they claim, and therefore you must denounce it, etc., etc. So one of the funny, bizarre things that you'll notice about Jews, liberals, and communists is that they will attack whites for being racist. And they'll attack whites in all sorts of ways. A white man is a racist when he does this, when he says that. A white woman is a racist when she does this or says that. But you'll notice that when black people or Jewish people engage in exactly the same behavior, that then it's not racist. All of a sudden, then they do a bunch of mental flip-flops as to why it's not racist. Oh no, it's not racist, they say. Let me give you an example of how they try to bullshit their way out of it by coming up with all kinds of crap. They'll say that racists can only be racist because we had power. We had power over them. So therefore, when we behave in this way, we are racist. But they can't be called racist because they have never had power. They've never had power over us. So you'll find that these Jews and liberals and communists come up with the most hypocritical garbage that you can imagine. When they are caught out doing racism, black racism or Jewish racism, you'll be astounded how they tell you, no, 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 it's only racist when the whites do it. And they come up with some kind of mental bullshit by which to excuse it. Watch these people carefully. Watch Jews, liberals, and blacks. Watch them carefully. You'll see hypocrisy like crazy. And you'll see that at the end of the day, the only people that can be racist by their definitions are white people. Only whites can be racist. Only whites are guilty. They are never guilty, even when they do exactly the same things. And that, I must tell you, is one of the nightmares of living under black rule. Under black rule, they have now reached the point where they have redefined these thoughts and things, even in legal terms and in legal language. And the government can make racist laws. There are, I can't remember how many laws and statutes. It's well over 100. I'm not sure if it's 140 or whatever. But there's more than 100 laws and statutes in South Africa that target white people only, and that are to the detriment of white people only. Whites will lose money, they'll lose career opportunities, they will be negatively impacted. And yet these blacks will turn around, and the Jews will defend them as well, as will the liberals. They'll all turn around and say, no, 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 this isn't racism. This isn't racism. This is just correcting things for your racism. You were racist, and now we've got to fix it. And the things that we are doing, no, it's not a crime. No, it's not immoral. What you did originally was immoral. And the stuff we're doing, no, we're just fixing it, and we're just fixing the things that you did, even though they are doing all kinds of things which by other legal definitions would be racist or hate speech. The place where it gets to its worst form is when you get to things like blacks singing, kill the Boer, kill the farmer. And then they say, no, no, kill the Boer, kill the farmer. No, that's not racist. That's not even hate speech. It's just our culture, and it's just a song, and it's just a struggle song from the past, and therefore it's okay. Meanwhile, the previous flag of white South Africa was banned, and if a white person has that flag in public, that is a hate crime. But they can go and sing, kill the Boer, kill the farmer, and it's no problem. But if a white person has got the previous flag and they put it up in public or they have it in public with them, they can be arrested for a hate crime. But the flag ain't hurting anyone, but there can be a whole crowd of blacks singing, oh, kill the Boer, kill the farmer. No, no, no. So this is the kind of nightmare world. This is the kind of nightmare world that you enter with Jews and blacks when they are in charge and you are now on the bottom. And all of this weird stuff, this black consciousness and all these other things, Pan-Africanism and all that kind of stuff, blacks are actually being taught to be racist. They're encouraged to be racist by the left, by the liberals, by the Jews. And they're being taught those things, and then everyone's like, no, that's not racism. That's not racism. Watch the Jews, watch the liberals, watch the blacks. Everywhere you will see many examples of this kind of bullshit. It seems to me that whites in the white right think that diplomacy is totally controlled by simply a case of who do you like and who don't you like. But the reality is that with big nations, let's say the top 10 nations in the world have got a lot of power. But they have got lots and lots of people that they deal with in different countries. So powerful nations make strategic decisions about who they are going to support and who they aren't. And they take various stances. And the Russian and American positions were determined after World War II, during the Cold War. Russia had a plan, the Soviets had a plan, Jewish Bolshevism had a plan. The plan was to conquer the world and make the whole world communist. Then America said that it was going to counter that. Of course, if America had left Adolf Hitler alone, we would never have had this problem to begin with. But be that as it may, America and Russia then vied for a position in the world. And the Russians came along with the propaganda line, and this has been their propaganda line since 1928, since Stalin. And that propaganda line is that they are here to free all the non-white people from the evils of European colonialism. And, of course, their deal with all these people is that these people must try and push communism. Yes, that is the deal that they pushed, especially in Africa. And they tell them that they're going to be free and that communism's going to be awesome. But the secret part of the Russian source, is that the Russians will give the blacks guns. They will arm them. Even for free. So the Russians had lots of these third parties all across the world, and especially in Africa, whom they armed, they trained, etc. It appears to me from my own investigations that the Americans then decided at a point in time, rather than just fighting communism, I think that they came to the conclusion that they weren't really succeeding in using warfare, like for example in Korea and Vietnam. And the Americans then started changing their tune to saying that they support democracy. Democracy and freedom. So Russia's there to free you from colonialism, but the Americans are going to make you liberals and they're going to give you democracy and, quotes, freedom. So that is the marketing line of those two superpowers. And they made those decisions decades ago. And each one had a certain amount of success based on that. And if people think that the Russians are just going to change their tune overnight, they don't really understand how international politics and especially foreign policy works. Because bonds have been built up between the Russians and other nations, especially nations in Black Africa. And these bonds are firm. And if the Russians turn around on a dime and suddenly say, oh, well, we support white racists, then they're going to have a huge problem because all of their allies know them to be against the fake crime of racism. We will return to these choices in foreign policy later, especially with the Americans, how it was that America became liberal. But some of you may remember that I've put out stuff about Professor Carol Quigley. And I really think that I need to revisit Quigley in much more detail, then you'll understand. Because whereas the Soviet Union wanted to conquer everyone and make everyone a communist, America is on a mission to turn everyone into a liberal. But the Americans aren't so keen to give weapons, whereas the Russians have always made sure that weaponry is the number one option. And if you think that Putin is somehow all that different to the previous Soviet Union, then clearly you haven't been watching Putin carefully. Take a look at the screen in front of you. Putin has said on many occasions that the collapse of the Soviet Union was the greatest disaster of the 20th century. He said that openly and he said it multiple times. And he reminds people about it. Here's another quote where Putin speaks about this, and the quote is, "Above all, we should acknowledge that the collapse of the Soviet Union was a major geopolitical disaster of the century. As for the Russian nation, it became a genuine drama. Tens of millions of our co-citizens and co-patriots found themselves outside Russian territory." Putin has been trying in his own way to bring back the military might and the prestige of the Soviet Union. And let me tell you a little secret about the Soviet Union that most people don't know. I have had quite a lot of contact directly with Bulgarians. Bulgarians are the Eastern Europeans who actually, even though they had a small nation, they played quite a big role for their size in the Warsaw Pact and the Soviet Union. They produced weaponry, they were good at intelligence. The Bulgarians were fully communist, and I have spoken to people who lived in Bulgaria under communism. One of my friends in South Africa is a Bulgarian who, the first chance she got to get out of Bulgaria, she got the hell out of Bulgaria and she came to Africa. She told me she didn't care where in the world she was going to go to. She just wanted to get the bloody hell away from the stupid communism of Bulgaria. She even ended up in Zimbabwe and would happily have stayed in Zimbabwe, but as things turned out, she actually got luckier and she ended up in South Africa. And she lives in South Africa. She doesn't want to know anything about going back to Bulgaria. And these Bulgarians, they can read Russian and Ukrainian, they can understand it, they can listen to people speaking Russian, they understand Russian. So my Bulgarian friend told me a very interesting thing. In fact, both my Bulgarian friends, the one in Bulgaria told me some other stuff, and the one in South Africa told me other stuff. So the lady that I know in South Africa, she told me a very interesting thing that goes back to this issue that Putin's got here, where he says tens of millions of our co-citizens found themselves outside Russian territory. Let me tell you what she told me. She said that in the time of the Soviet Union, people in the Soviet Union were forced to go and live in other territories. There was a forced breeding program where people were forced to move out of this state into that state. And they were forced to stay in different states and then to find a spouse and get married in that different state. And she said to me, that is why nowadays you've got these Russians who are sitting in other states outside of Russia, but they're married to non-Russians. And they've had children. And that's because they were forced to do that. That was how the Soviet Union worked. So that explains why there are all these Russians who are in other states outside of Russia now. Because basically there was a forced breeding program to interbreed Russians with other people in other states of the Soviet Union. So that's something that you won't hear. My Bulgarian friend in Bulgaria showed me articles from Bulgaria from a couple of years ago. And Putin is a multiculturalist. And inside Russia, Putin had been saying that Christians and Muslims must work together. There is absolutely nothing about Putin that indicates that he's pro-white or he gives a shit about whites at all. He's a freaking multiculturalist inside Russia. He gets all these different people, and they're not just different religions, they are different races, and he's trying to interbreed them together, even though they may be of different races. Remember that Russians, like the Americans, have not been interbreeding together for as long as people like the Germans and the French and others in Central Europe. where those people have lived together for thousands of years. Russia's only been around for about 1,000 years or so. So yes, Russia is maybe older than America, but it's not as old as Italy and Spain and France and Germany and those countries, where people have been mixing for a long time, and now there is a clearer strain of people. Anyway, take a look at this short video. Here is Putin, and here is Putin talking about colonialism. Listen to what Putin says about European colonialism and what it did to Africa. And of course he comes and says, oh well, these are proven facts, blah 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 blah. Well, listen to what Putin says. You cannot tell me in any way, shape or form that Putin is friendly to white South Africans or to Boers or to any whites in Africa. His position is clear and the position of Russia is clear. Here's the video. Listen to Putin.
В значительной степени тот уровень благосостояния, который достигнут в бывших колониальных державах, он основан на ограблении Африки. Это всем известно хорошо. Да, собственно, исследователи в той же самой Европе этого и не скрывают. Так и есть. Они говорят, на горе и страданиях африканских народов построено в значительной степени. Не говорю целиком и полностью, нет, но в значительной степени благополучие колониальных держав. Это очевидный факт. Ограбление, работорговля, конечно.
So that was Putin's take on colonialism. And listen to him. It's all about crime. The whites smashed the blacks. The whites stole things from the blacks. He even says that slavery was part of colonialism. That's a big fat lie. Putin is no friend of Europe. I want to read something to you because you're going to hear some other things out of the mouths of blacks. What you see on the screen in front of you is a paragraph and a half from President Richard Nixon's book, The Real War. Nixon wasn't a bad guy at all. And Nixon was destroyed by the Jew Kissinger. And all the stuff around Richard Nixon and all the, quotes, crimes that he committed, that is a thing that happened that they made a whole fuss about, which is very similar to the junk that they're trying with Trump, where they're saying, oh, you committed this crime, you did that thing, you did that thing. In the case of Nixon, he hardly did much, but the liberal mass media destroyed him. The Jew mass media smashed Nixon. There are some interesting recordings of Nixon's private conversations when he was president, and Nixon was a right-winger. And Nixon mentioned the blacks and the Jews, and he spoke about them. Nixon's not a bad guy at all, and he's a hell of a lot more knowledgeable than the presidents that Americans have had in the last 20 to 30 years. In the last 30 years even, America's had dreadful presidents, outright communists. Nixon wrote many pages about this in his final book. He wrote this book after he'd been thrown out of power, pushed out of power by Jewry. And Nixon went on to write a book called The Real War, and it's actually an excellent book. And the stuff that Nixon wrote about Africa and Southern Africa and the whites, he knew exactly what was going on. So did Ronald Reagan, but I like Nixon more. He came out and he wrote this book, and he tried to warn people in the West. But I just want to focus on this one paragraph. So let's read it. South Africa is also the continent's leading economic power. It alone provides 40% of the industrial production of all Africa and 25% of its agricultural output. Remember, this was written in 1980. So back in 1980, South Africa alone produced 40% of all the industrial production of all of Africa and a quarter of all the agriculture of Africa. Anyway, So let's move to the next paragraph. Listen to this. The Soviets want Southern Africa. And let me just pause there. The reason they want Southern Africa, which is where most of the whites are, is that Southern Africa is stinking rich in minerals. It's the mineral treasure house of the planet. Southern Africa is to minerals what the Middle East is to oil. I'm not joking with you. And Nixon points that out. But of course, the ultimate prize is South Africa itself. So this is what Nixon writes. The Soviets want Southern Africa. They also try to exploit its racial troubles, particularly those of the Republic of South Africa, in order to incite hostility toward the West. And if they could, they would like to precipitate a military confrontation and a race war there, which would have incalculably tragic consequences for black and white alike, as well as for the whole continent of Africa and the whole of the Western world. It would leave a lot of shattered pieces for Russia to pick up. But I just want to focus on that sentence where he says, and if they could, they would like to precipitate a military confrontation and a race war there. Where I do differ with him is that I don't think it will have tragic consequences for whites. That's too much liberal thinking, that. But Nixon believes that that would be the outcome. But he's saying that the Russians want a race war. And I'll show you some things out of the mouths of blacks. Now listen to another conference that Putin had recently and what he says about Africa.
Подчеркну, наша страна всегда уделяла и будет уделять первостепенное внимание сотрудничеству с африканскими государствами. Не будет преувеличением сказать, что это один из неизменных приоритетов российской внешней политики. Если мы все-таки примем решение не продлять эту сделку через 60 суток, то мы готовы весь тот объем, который был направлен за предыдущее время в особо нуждающиеся страны Африки, поставить из России в эти страны.
Now listen to the black who's currently the biggest troublemaker in South Africa. His name is Julius Malema and he runs a political party called the EFF, Economic Freedom Fighters. That's just a cover story for a communist thing. And all of his guys wear red and black uniforms. Red and black is the old communist stuff and these blacks are all commies. And Malema was in the Youth League of the African National Congress. But rest assured, they all agree broadly on the same principles. They all agree that whites are the problem. When Putin invaded Ukraine, there was a government minister in Zimbabwe, former Rhodesia, who said that they would fight for Putin. Listen to what comes out of Malema's mouth regarding Russia and Putin.
South Africa right now calls itself non-aligned in the context of the war, but these are two different things. South Africa is an ally of Russia. Now, the second question is, where does South Africa stand on the war? It says I'm a non-aligned in relation to war, but Russia remains South Africa's friend. So we cannot create confusion around there. Don't create an impression that it is Malema who's going to come and create an alliance with Russia.
But there are some very specific
I will go beyond that. I will go beyond the friendship with Russia. And in the war, I will align with Russia and I will even supply the weapons to Russia. Because Russia is in a war with imperialism. And any agenda that seeks to push back imperialist agendas, it's well within the policies of the EFF.
So there you can see, Julius Malema says, if I was the president of South Africa, I would give weapons to Russia. These blacks deal with the Russians. They deal with them. They go there. They deal with them at a high level. They know the Russians inside out. These blacks from South Africa go to Russia more often than anybody in the white right. All these people in the white right who are busy defending Russia, etc., the vast majority of them have never even climbed on a plane and actually gone to Russia. These blacks have been in Russia. They speak to the Russians. And they don't just speak to Russians on the street. They go to high-level Russians. These blacks have got high-level contact with Russians. And it's not just South Africa. Places like Angola and Zimbabwe, those countries deal with the Russians and the Chinese directly at a high level. And there you can see in that other news video that the Russians were behind a coup up there in West Africa, in Burkina Faso. And that guy as well, he's been to Russia, he's been very proud to be with Putin, and Putin gives him free weapons. And all of those countries up in West Africa, we've now got this potential war that might happen up there in West Africa, where Niger and Burkina Faso and I think Guinea have all had coups, and the Russians are behind that. The Russians have played all across Africa. They've been virtually everywhere. From South Africa to Rhodesia to Angola to Mozambique to the Congo, they've been everywhere. Here are two short videos. In the first one, you will see that in 2023, the South African military was defending why it's going to have naval exercises with Russia and China. Of course, between you and me, our navy is totally worthless. But it doesn't change the fact that it shows what they want to do. That they did have some minor little naval exercise as much as they could with the uselessness that they have here in South Africa. Thank God our military is useless. But you'll hear it out of their mouths. And then that's followed by another news item where Zimbabwe received 18 helicopters from Russia. I can tell you that that is a big present for an African country. I don't know of any African country that just got 18 helicopters. To the rest of you in the first world, this might not look like much, but make no mistake, this is a big present from Russia.
South African taxpayers and
South Africa's military on Wednesday defended its decision to host controversial naval exercises jointly staged with Russia and China and coinciding with the one-year anniversary of the Kremlin's invasion of Ukraine.
The Commander-in-Chief of the National Defense Force, President Ramaphosa, yesterday at the Parade of Armed Forces Day indicated that there is a need for the South African National Defense Force to be provided with the necessary and required capabilities to ensure safety and security in the country, as well as our international obligations outside the country.
Originally slated to start last week, the exercise dubbed Moose C2 kicked off on Wednesday along South Africa's east coast. More than 350 members of South Africa's armed forces will take part in the exercises, which wind up on February 27.
The strategic objectives for Exercise Morsi 2 are inclusive of enhance and develop relations between China, Russia and South Africa and expand friendly cooperation between these three armies.
Coming on the eve of the anniversary of Russia's onslaught on Ukraine, the drills were described by commentators as politically dubious and showing insensitivity. The exercise have also been criticized by the United States and the European Union. To answer the question, I would like to repeat that all new elements of the combined naval exercise includes mutual maneuvering from three sides, the Russian Federation, the People's Republic of China, and South African Republic. Assistance to the vessel involved in the disaster, assistance of vessel captured by the pirates and artillery fire, at naval targets. South Africa has refused to condemn the invasion of Ukraine, which has largely isolated Moscow on the international stage, saying it prefers dialogue to end the war.
Brand new Russian-built helicopters were delivered to Harare at the handover ceremony presided over by President Emmerson Mnangagwa. The helicopters will be used for air ambulances, air policing, and rescue missions in case of disasters.
Zimbabwe and the region around us, in particular Mozambique and Malawi, are prone to cyclones. When these attack us because we don't have capacity, we try to beg from those countries who have capacity. Yes, of course, we have South Africa, our neighbor here. They have capacity. They come and help us. But today we stand tall with these helicopters because when these cyclones strike us again, look at this capacitation.
Mnangagwa defended his country's support for Russia at a time the West is seeking to isolate Moscow for its conflict with Ukraine.
Recently, we're experiencing pressure from certain Western countries that we should not go to Petersburg in July for the Africa-Russian Federation Summit. Not long ago, a few months ago, African heads of state were in Washington. Russia never complained. You can continue speculating in your own minds.
I must note that our countries are similar in certain respect. Zimbabwe, same as Russia, defends its sovereignty and struggles against the Western sanctions. I have to note that Zimbabwe is one of the countries that did not support anti-Russian actions at the international political arena. In turn, the Russian Federation is always ready to give a helpful shoulder to the friendly nation.
The Zimbabwean president also revealed that his country had struggled to maintain its fleet for old Western-made military aircraft due to economic sanctions and an enforced arms embargo by the United States of America and the European Union, and that it had been forced to turn to friendly nations for support. Sophie Mukwena, SABC News.
In that last film footage that you saw there with all those helicopters, and you saw that black guy talking, and you saw the Russian government minister also speaking, I just have to take a bit of a detour and just tell you a little bit about the crap that black guy is speaking there. That black guy, his name is Mnangagwa. Mnangagwa is the current president of Zimbabwe. He's only the second black guy to run Zimbabwe after white rule. So these blacks have had what used to be wonderful Rhodesia. They have now ruled it for 43 years. The whites had it for a grand total of 90 years. So the blacks have had it for 43 years, which is almost exactly half the length of the total time that the whites ruled it. And remember, when the whites went there, there was nothing there. There were just huts and bush. There was no infrastructure of any kind whatsoever. Whereas these blacks have inherited functioning countries with full infrastructure, working infrastructure from the whites. And the whites even taught them and showed them how to run it all. It is truly a hideous, disgusting thing that has been done there. But Mnangagwa is now the president, and he managed to come to power through his own trickery against the previous trickster, Robert Mugabe. Robert Mugabe was really the clever black guy, the cunning, ruthless black guy who came to power first. He was the prime enemy of the whites. But Mnangagwa worked for Mugabe and was one of the government ministers who was reporting directly to Mugabe. Mnangagwa, in a nutshell, was Mugabe's chief murderer. That was his job. He made sure that any blacks who needed to be killed were killed quietly and gotten rid of. As time went by, Mugabe had so many enemies and he had so many people, even people close to him, turning on him, and he needed to have them killed. So Mnangagwa organized all the killing. So you're looking at the murderer-in-chief of Mugabe, who is now the president of Zimbabwe. And all of these blacks are commies, and they learned from the Russians. They learned about the killing and the murdering. And people like J.B. Campbell have spoken about that. And all of these blacks across Africa who are presidents and government ministers, they are making big amounts of money. When whites ruled Africa, all the whites of Africa, all the whites of Africa, whether it was Ian Smith or the Portuguese or the South Africans, the whites who ruled in Africa were extremely frugal. Their salaries were a pittance of the salaries these black worthless garbage get these days. These blacks are busy making not just millions of dollars, but billions of dollars. They are stinking rich. You should see the palaces they live in. You should see the things they own. White men never were so wasteful and were never greedy, thieving scum. All of these black leaders, without exception, all of these blacks in parliament, without exception, in any black country, including South Africa, these people are here to steal and to feed at the trough. They are here for the gravy train, all of them. So when they get stuff, like these helicopters and things, exactly how many of those helicopters will actually be used for real government purposes, etc., remains to be seen. These people are busy wheeling and dealing and stealing, and they're up to all kinds of nonsense. I know, I've heard many stories from whites that I knew personally who dealt with blacks or who were in various places. The corruption in Africa is unmatched. So Mnangagwa is just yet another black commie, and they know and they liaise directly with the Russians. And as you can see, there's the Russian minister there coming and talking to the blacks, and he's telling them, oh, we're defending our democracy, we're defending our state, just like you in Zimbabwe are defending your state. Yeah. But I just want to tell you some of the bullshit that that black guy, Mnangagwa, is talking that the rest of you would never pick up on. In his speech there, he says, oh, we live in a place, in a country that is prone to cyclones, and we are so thankful that we've got these helicopters because we can't get spare parts for the Western-made helicopters. And the reason they can't get the spares is because America has started putting sanctions on Zimbabwe and on those thieving scum at the top. So that is why they now apparently can't get spare parts for the helicopters, etc. So I don't have a problem with some sanctions against those blacks. And let me tell you that the sanctions against those blacks is mainly against those black leaders. And those nations are otherwise able to trade completely freely. You cannot even begin to compare the wussified little bit of sanctions that is put on Zimbabwe with the kinds of sanctions that was put on the whites of Rhodesia. You cannot even compare it. It is like maybe 5% as bad as what the whites of Rhodesia had to face. The whites of Rhodesia were clobbered straight in the teeth. Anyway, so this black guy goes on and he says, We are subject to cyclones, and the region gets hit by cyclones. And then he talks about Malawi and Mozambique. Now, Mozambique is on the coast. It's the former Portuguese territory, and yes, it does experience a cyclone now and then. I stand to be corrected, but I don't think the cyclones that Mozambique experiences are as bad as some of those cyclones that hit America and Florida. So yes, I'll accept that now and then, this is not a continual thing, okay? Now and then, every so many years, there might be a cyclone that hits Mozambique. But Malawi and Zimbabwe are hundreds of kilometers inland. Let me tell you that there's no cyclone that actually hits Zimbabwe or Malawi in any way. Maybe they have some kind of windy weather, maybe they have some extra rain, but trust me, it is nothing like what the Americans get clobbered with in Florida, in the state of Florida, when they have cyclones. So when he says, oh, we are in a region where we got all these cyclones that are coming, cyclones, as if cyclones are like an annual problem. That's the other thing, is the cyclones are not an annual problem, and they don't reach inland. And in all the years that I lived in Rhodesia, and that I knew people that lived there, and that I looked at the history of Rhodesia, I have never come across any instance where the whites even batted an eye over the issue of cyclones, because it's nothing. It doesn't affect those countries in any way that is severe. And that is true for Zimbabwe and for Malawi. But here's this big black murderer crybaby, and he is now saying, oh, we are living in a region that's got cyclones, and we are so grateful that we finally have these helicopters. I'm sure you don't really need all of that just for the cyclones. For a cyclone that might hit you once in 10 years, once in 20 years. These things are not a huge issue, and they're not annual. But the big old lying murderer crybaby makes out like it's a huge problem. This is very similar to these blacks, also in Zimbabwe, who went on a rampage for years. First they go and they kill the farmers and they destroy their agricultural industry. Then for the next 10 years, they run around saying, oh, we're suffering from droughts, we're suffering from droughts. The droughts, there's such a drought problem. No, there isn't a drought problem, you asshole. You are the cause of your own problems. It's almost like the story of the orphan, where the child murders his own parents. And then when he's murdered his own parents, he sits and cries, oh, help me, I'm an orphan. Somebody help me. That's exactly the situation the blacks are in. Is they created their own problems. Anyway, Zimbabwe or Rhodesia did have droughts. There were droughts when I was there. And I must tell you that even when we had bad droughts, it was never a case that we're going to run out of food or anything like that. The whites were always producing food. The whites always had extra food. The whites could always export. And you'll never see that the whites in the past, no matter how long ago it is, you'll never see that the whites of that region, whether they were the whites of Rhodesia or the Portuguese in Mozambique, you'll never see instances where the whites were running around, oh, we're running out of food, droughts are a huge problem, droughts, 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 we're going to die because of droughts, we need food because of droughts. You'll never see that having happened in the past, okay? But these big black crybabies, these big black crybabies, they're always talking and crying and whining. Meanwhile, the real problem is they killed the white farmers who were feeding them, who were driving their economy. They're too lazy and too useless to grow their own food. And now they're looking for free handouts from the rest of the world again. It's back to blacks with their begging bowl. And it's as simple as that. So you'll see these black crybabies, They wanted control of countries. They were willing to kill whites to get control of countries. They stole everything they could lay their hands on. They murdered those they needed to murder. And now they turn around and no, I can't handle it because I've got cyclones and I've got sanctions and I've got droughts. Yeah, sure. I don't feel your pain, you worthless fool. And there are no whites who were in those situations or even worse situations than them who ever turned around and was crying and whining like a baby. Whites always could look after themselves. But I thought I'd just have that little rant there because these people, let me tell you, if you had to know how much money those blacks have got, those blacks live in houses, the likes of which you will never live in. They, in some cases, own aircraft and have access to things that you will never have access to, that even billionaires in America won't have access to. And there they stand, oh, we need this, we need that. Oh yes, and that's another thing. All these big black leaders in Africa, all of them are running around begging white people for food, for money. Our people are suffering, they say. Meanwhile, they are stealing everything. And they're stealing from and cheating their own people. They live a screwed up existence, and it's not our problem. And we whites, we've got a completely different way of running countries and looking after ourselves and functioning as a group. We are not like that, and we never run into those problems because we are far better organized and we think ahead and we use our skills and our savvy. So you'll never have seen a white man in Africa running around crying for food or for any other help. The whites always took care of things. And when whites ruled Africa, Africa was a net exporter of all kinds of food. Food, animals, you name it. Agricultural production was pouring out of Africa during colonialism. Now, all these blacks are, all of them are importing food. They're importing food. Worthless garbage. You cannot compare these people with us. Just because they got countries, the country is a stupid, ridiculous thing. It bears no resemblance to white society. It looks like it, but it's a charade. The whole thing's a charade. And then liberals and Jews run around in America and Europe. Oh no, Africa's a success. These black people, they're doing so great. Bullshit. All bullshit. If whites were ruling these countries, you'd see how these countries were rocking and rolling. And even if you take a step back in time, 50, 60, 70 years earlier, you'll see how much whites were getting done in Africa. We will revisit some of these topics later. But don't be fooled by what liberals and Jews have told you about Africa. They've talked more shit than you can believe. And they've hidden so much. They've hidden so much, including the corruption, the crimes, and the murders, and all the hideous, disgusting things of these blacks. And then they still turn around sanctimoniously and tell you, oh, the white man was so evil. Colonialism was so evil. Apartheid was so evil. All bollocks. All of it. Bollocks. So that's it for now, but I'll be back with this issue of what the blacks were taught. Everything the blacks did in Africa that's violent and anti-white, they were taught this. It started with the Jews in South Africa. Jews spent decades trying to get the blacks interested in communism. Then when the Jews and their puppet Mandela started with violence and terrorism and blowing stuff up, then they went and put the blacks in touch with the Russians. But the Russians had also been stirring up things, and that's why they were kicked out in the 1950s. For the Russians, the blacks are their foot soldiers here in Africa, and they encourage violence. and they encourage war. But it seems that Western liberalism and especially Western economic power has managed to get some kind of hold on various black countries. But the Russians, they aren't afraid of violence and killing and war. And their tool for here in Africa is Wagner. That's why the Jew Prigozhin could go and he could march on Moscow and he could basically engage in treason. And even so, Putin didn't have him jailed or anything like that. Why? Because Wagner is so important to Russian intelligence, to the FSB, to the GRU. The FSB is just the new name for the old KGB. The GRU is actually much more specialized and professional. The GRU is Russian military intelligence. Wagner is basically a front for the FSB and the GRU. But I'll be back to show you more of what blacks have to say, and you're in for some surprises.
So for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, you know you don't.